The 24th Problem by Janiah Riley. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on the works of Andrew Hussey. Chapter 7. Certification.
The Error of Her Benevolence. Empress Feferi Pyxis. Imperial Culling Center, Prime. Before us.
Ma'am, please step forward onto the yellow rectangle indicated on the floor. Please place your hands at your sides.
A short pause, then the voice from the speaker resumed.
Do you have any weapons, sharp objects, food items, beverages, or explosive devices?
Poor Amariam looked down at the sheer fabric of her dress, then back up toward the thick pane of bulletproof glass that was in front of her. Do you think I'm capable of hiding anything in this outfit? Behind the glass, a bored-looking olive blood, this place was fancy enough to rate mid-blood security, rolled her eyes and pressed down on a button by her intercom microphone.
Ma'am, please just answer the question.
No, I don't have any weapons, sharp objects, food items, beverages, or explosive devices on me. Is that to your liking? Purim realized she wasn't doing a very good job of keeping the irritation out of her voice. She'd been here plenty of times before, but this guard was new, and besides, there was always a protocol to follow. Everything in the Empire had a protocol to follow. She also knew that they would be scanning her thoroughly from behind their plate-reinforced walls, checking to make sure that she was actually telling the truth about what she was and wasn't carrying. It seemed like an interminable moment. Purim looked around the now-familiar entryway, making note of the small changes that had been made since she'd last been there. Someone had updated some of the signage, and the whole place was repainted in a nice shade of neutral white. Purim had never been inside the foyer of an imperial prison before, but she didn't imagine it was all that much different. Probably they had the same architects designing both. Eventually, she heard the crackle of the intercom again, followed almost immediately by the loud buzzing sound of the nearby security door being opened. The guard behind the window glass motioned her forward with a,
"Have a nice day, ma'am,"
and she was pulling open the door and stepping through. Past the security gates, the building began to look a little warmer, if no less industrial and harsh. The walls were painted a combination of neutral tones, with small accents and a wood-like material that was no doubt supposed to be soothing and pleasant to look at, but just made everything look like cheap furniture. The lighting was always kept low and slightly warm, intended to look like a medical facility, she supposed. It reminded her of the brooding facilities that she'd done a brief training rotation through before she decided that her talents would be better utilized in other areas of specialization.
"Oh, we weren't expecting you to come by so soon,"
a chipper voice from off to the side. Purim turned to see one of the center's directors standing there wearing a hot pink suit over the usual regulation color outfit that her position required while she was on duty, teal. This place was fancy enough to rate teal medical personnel and counselors. Purim turned to face this woman. She looked vaguely familiar, but Purim couldn't quite place the name.
"Right. Well, I received notice as his secondary contact. The primaries are, well, one of them's off-world and the other is the heiress, so
indisposed at the moment."
"And you're Purim Mayim, of course."
The woman beamed at her, then stuck out her hands to shake quickly. Her nails were painted bright pink as well. A little bit of flex in regulation that her station afforded her, Purim supposed.
"My name is Assistant Director Sezyet. Please just call me Stelsa, though. I hate how formal everyone is with all the security and everything."
"I've been here before, but still, it's a lot,"
Purim said half under her breath.
"Well, the safety and well-being of our residents is of the utmost importance, and we can't very well ensure that if anyone could just walk in."
She said it with a broad grin and was already walking down the corridor, motioning for Purim to follow her.
"And speaking of residents, I'm sure you want to go see yours now."
"Right."
Purim looked around the corridor, which was almost entirely empty, save for a pair of jade blood attendants that looked like they were in the middle of a rotation on the floor. Purim had never trained in a place like this before. All of her experience was practical.
"I'm sure he'll be so happy to see you. He's been so good lately. Well, until..."
She trailed off, not finishing her sentence. Purim saw her smile flicker and fade before quickly returning, looking a bit more forced.
"It's nothing to worry about. All of our residents have good days and bad days."
That was, in Purim's estimation, a very charitable way to look at the situation. From her experience visiting, it seemed like it was mostly bad days, and days when he was heavily sedated. She grimaced, glad that Stelsa wasn't looking at her when she did it,
They walked all the way to the end of the main corridor and turned to a set of locked doors. Stelza reached out with her ID card and swiped it, waiting a minute for the doors to register and unlock.
I just think it's wonderful that the caretakers are so involved in this case. A lot of our residents don't have very good support systems. Well, most of our residents at this center do, but, you know.
She trailed off again, fading into laughter that sounded either nervous or manic. Porim took the meaning well enough. She'd never been in one of the other centers, but she'd heard plenty of stories. They weren't prisons, but they might as well be. Here, at least, the residents, how Porim despised the terminology they used, the rank euphemisms, had some time to exist as themselves, however brief. Another set of doors, then another turn. Then they were standing at the head of a hallway that lacked the faux warmth of the rest of the center. Here everything was whitewash and the harsh angles of simplicity. Doors lined the hall, each of them looking like they could withstand a moderately sized demolition charge. This was the high security wing.
Wait, why is he in here?
Porim had watched Stelsa's face carefully as she smiled nervously, then frowned, then smiled again in a way that looked somehow even faker than before.
Oh, don't worry about it. It's just a standard procedure when we can't get in touch with a patient. Residents, caretakers right away. Nothing at all to worry about.
Porim was sure that this wasn't entirely true, but what authority did she have in this situation? The only reason that this Teal was showing her any deference whatsoever was because of the other people involved in the equation. Were it not for that, she was sure that Stelsa would have very politely told her to bend over and suck her own bulge. She was used to navigating this kind of thing, however, and simply nodded politely.
Of course, I didn't mean to imply anything improper was happening. May I?
Stelsa nodded, seemingly mollified by the reassurance.
Yes. Keep in mind that he's coming off after a rather large dose of sedatives. He was quite unruly earlier, hence the urgency of our communication.
Shit timing for that, too.
Porim nodded again. She did a lot of nodding in her work, she found. Stelsa was already in the process of using a key. Not a key card, but an old-style mechanical key to unlock one of the cells. Porim wondered briefly what they actually called them. Certainly not cells, but probably something like behavioral rectification pods or something similarly dreadful. The door opened and Stelsa stepped back, coiled like a spring. Maybe she was just a facilities director, but Porim had a feeling that she was more than capable of putting down any of the facility's residents if they gave her shit.
Mr. Vantis, how are we feeling right now?
Stelsa's voice was honeyed sweetness, drizzled over the most bitter center that Porim had ever heard. In that moment, it was clear how much utter disdain the assistant director had for the man that was sitting inside.
Are we doing much better?
Sitting in the far corner of the room, Cankri Vantis sat up and growled at Stelsa.
I have a few choice.
He stopped before he could say something else to get him even further up on Stelsa's shit list.
Porim? Is that you?
Stelsa rolls her eyes and turns to Porim.
You'll have a half hour, and we'll come get you. This room is monitored for video and audio, so please be aware of that. Concupiscent activity of any kind is strictly forbidden.
She raised an eyebrow, and Porim wondered how many of the rumors surrounding her had somehow filtered their way through to the center. It was bait. She didn't rise to it. With a shrug, Stelsa walked out and closed the door, latching it behind her.
Is that really you? Like, you?
Cankri was still sitting in the corner, looking up eagerly at Porim. He was dressed in the unassuming gray sweatpants and sweatshirt that was the default standard for the center's population. They were allowed additional clothing at their caretaker's discretion, but...
Cankri, where's your sweater?
Porim walked over and took a seat on the floor next to him. The whole room had some kind of anti-fatigue padding on the floor, and the walls looked like they were covered in a thick layer of foam. He smiled thinly at her.
They took it away when they put me in here.
He gestured around the room.
My head hurts. Did they give you a bottle of water or something?
She shook her head and reached out to put a hand on his shoulder, but he shrugged away from her.
I'm sorry, Cankri, they didn't let me bring anything in.
He sighed and leaned against the foam-padded wall, closing his eyes. When he talked, he kept his voice low.
Where's Mina?
Of course, that was the first thing he'd want to know. After everything that had happened, she was technically listed as his primary caretaker, but there were complications.
You know why she can't come here right now, she said, lowering her voice.
She supposed it wasn't anything that she necessarily couldn't talk about,
but she also didn't really want to broadcast every second of their conversation to whoever was listening in. She suspected Kankri was well aware of this. He was talking quietly enough that the concealed microphones probably couldn't pick it up.
Right. Of course not. I miss her.
It looked like he was starting to tear up.
What about Orania?
The second caretaker on record, the one who usually did most of the actual visiting when she had the chance, because she had the status and pull to be able to make decisions but lacked the additional messiness of having a red relationship with the resident in her past, even if she and Mina had some complications in that regard.
We're just a bunch of fuck-ups, aren't we?
She's off-world right now. I don't know any other details. Which was true enough. Orania had shipped off without explaining where she was going, and that meant something for the Empire. Even Mina wasn't sure what was going on. So either Mina was lying about not knowing, or whatever it was went over Mina's head. Given how that reduced the number of possible key parties down to one, Porin wasn't sure she liked the implication. Kankri's face fell.
So just you, then?
She nodded solemnly. More of that, even around someone she felt more comfortable with.
It seems that's the way it is, yeah?
You planning to tell me what happened? The Center was always vague about these kinds of things. A lot of your resident experienced a mishap unless one of our guards decided it was time to give the low blood a little bit of a tune-up to the head. Kankri sighed heavily and leaned in towards Porim, pressing his shoulder up against hers. She knew he wasn't usually a huge fan of touch, generally speaking, but he probably recognized the importance of keeping his voice down, and this was the important part.
I had a bad dream, I think.
He paused for a second.
That's what they told me anyway. It was all just a bad dream.
A dream? That got you locked up in here? The smile on Kankri's face was painful to look at, full of the kind of wry bitterness that had defined the way Kankri had once spoken about the Beforean Empire, before he ended up in here.
I'm free to go back to my quarters as soon as I demonstrate a calm mind and an even center. The curse of my mutant blood is that I'm prone to emotionality and delusion.
The sarcasm was unmistakable, even as he was keeping his voice down.
So I would prefer to forget about my dream and have my current acting caretaker sign off on my return to the general population of this singular place.
She turned her head and dropped her voice to a low whisper.
Why don't you tell me about your dream first? It must have been something to get you that excited.
Blood or no? His face twisted a little at that, but he remained still and quiet.
I was standing on a balcony,
he began. There was something breathless about the way he was retelling this.
In front of me there was a tower that rose so tall that I couldn't see the top in the clouds. And the bottom fell away into deep shadows. And everything was made of this brilliant white stone, like alabaster, I think that's the name of it.
That's very poetic, Kankri. Is this some place you've been before?
He seemed to stop to think, and when he answered, the words felt carefully selected.
I think it's some place I haven't been yet. Or maybe this was the first time. You know how it is with dreams.
Porim felt her arms tingle. She ran her hands along the trace of the tattoos that curled and curved along each arm, tracing them in a pattern that she always found soothing when she was nervous or afraid. Right now, she was feeling a little of both.
Are you sure you don't know where Orania is?
Kankri asked, his voice sounding strained.
I'm sorry, but I wouldn't keep asking if it weren't important.
She was wishing she knew the answer now, too. It was feeling more and more important.
I'm sorry I don't know. Mina knows she went off-world, but no one seems to know where.
Mina should ask the Empress.
Porim felt her heart skip as she hoped he hadn't said it loud enough to be heard by the microphones. This was uncomfortably close to why he'd ended up in the Culling Center in the first place.
You know why she can't do that? Porim hissed. Look, we've been working on getting you approved for a home program, but I don't have the pull for it. Mina is... You know why she can't right now?
The look in his eyes was painful to see. The downcast sadness of his expression and the wet glint of tears in the corners.
I know.
All I know is that she's not on before us, and she's not in contact with anyone right now. If she's on the rotation, she should be back in a few perigees and then...
A few perigees?
Kankri said it probably a lot louder than he meant to,
He quickly reeled his voice back down.
I can't wait that long. This place is... Do you have any idea what it's like here?
Of course she didn't. Because she'd been fortunate enough to be hatched without any defects. Because she'd chosen a lot in life that, while disreputable in many ways, was at least legitimate. Because she hadn't gotten into a messy, flushed relationship with the Empress's protégé. I'm sorry, Kankri, I'm doing what I can. We're all doing what we can. He deflated and leaned back against the wall.
I know.
A long, awful pause.
The dream was so real, it was scary. And when I woke up, I guess I was screaming.
The assistant director hadn't bothered to tell her that one. No doubt a big part of why they'd thrown him in here and pumped him full of whatever sedatives were currently working their way out of his bloodstream.
Oh?
Yeah, I guess.
Why were you screaming? She asked.
Kankri only shrugged in response, stopping as if trying to collect his thoughts.
It all felt so real. Like I wasn't dreaming, more like seeing someplace else, some other...
He paused again, and a dark look came over his face.
Some other time, maybe? It must have been...
None of this was making what he was saying any less confusing. Maybe the drugs in his system were still having an effect.
Are you absolutely sure you don't know where Arania is?
She could hear an edge of panic working its way into his voice.
I feel like I'm not getting across how important this is.
He was picking at the fabric of his horrid gray sweatshirt, pulling and pinching at the fabric. Porum had known Kankri enough to recognize a panic attack starting up, and she moved over a little bit closer to him. I know this is odd for you.
That's an understatement, Porum, he snapped.
Still keeping his voice down but venting with barely concealed anger. I know. But I can't tell you where Arania is because I don't know where she is and neither does Mina. Which worries me almost as much as it probably worries you. She waited for another explosion, but he held his tongue this time. I came here because they wanted your caretaker and because... She took a deep breath. I came here because I worry about you. And not a lot of other people do right now.
You don't need to rub that in, Porum.
She didn't, she supposed. But there was still a distant part of her, a part she didn't especially like, that was still angry at how he'd responded to her current choice of profession, how he'd acted when she revealed that she'd chosen to go to the Quadrant District, rather than complete her brooding cavern training. It had been the weirdest combination of disgust and jealousy. She still resented him for that, even though maybe he'd had good reason to feel it, and who was she to judge him, being here on the outside? I'm sorry, you're right. Look. I'm sorry about Arania. If I find out more, I'll come tell you. Just keep your head down until then, okay? Don't get tossed back in here. It's not going to make this process any easier.
It's just...
It looked like he was trying to process something distant now. And there was a strange look that came over him while he talked.
She was in my dreams, I think.
Oh? Well, were you thinking about her recently? This was everything he was freaking out about? What the fuck?
She didn't bother to say any of the last part out loud. What point would there be in it?
I don't know. It looked like her anyway, but it didn't feel like her.
Sometimes dreams are strange, Kankri. That doesn't mean anything. I'm sure Arania is fine.
She was getting annoyed with him again in spite of herself. He was making such a big deal out of a single dream. Maybe it was unnerving because he was trapped in this place and everything felt like a big deal.
She's just off-world. Doing something for the fleet's science division, I'm sure.
It didn't feel like her at all. She talked to me, you know.
She was about to say something else, to offer another reassurance that Arania would be back soon enough and he could ask her about this himself, when he said something that made her blood run cold. It didn't make any sense at the time, but things like these often gain greater context and meaning as time and circumstances change.
She told me that I should be afraid.
For the text of this and other stories by the same author, visit the AO3 page of Janiah Riley. The music is Cycles, composed and produced by Sam Gabriel. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voice over, or character, please get in touch using the contact information on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can also find other stories that I've read, my Discord server, and ways to support what I do. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.